If you needed to be reminded all the joys and sorrows that got shared this morning, reminded you that we live in a transitory world. As we heard just now from the poet William Stafford, tragedies happen, people get hurt or die, and you suffer and get old. Nothing you do can stop time's unfolding. The earth is forever turning. The seasons come and go. Time keeps moving on. Life is beautiful and sweet and sad sometimes. Anybody know what entropy is? I'm no scientist, and I don't pretend to understand entropy. But in thermodynamics, whatever that is, entropy is the degradation of matter and energy in the universe. It's this movement of things from order toward disorder. Things unwind, things unravel, things fall apart. I don't know about you, but the thought of entropy makes me sad. Until at least I heard the sermon at this year's Merrimack Valley Martin Luther King breakfast. The preacher that morning was Reverend Alicia Marie Johnson, a Baptist minister who earned her bachelor's degree in chemistry. That day, she preached to us a hopeful sermon about entropy. I wish I'd taken better notes, but she said the faithful response to this dissipation of energy is the application of our own energy, that the fact of entropy calls us to work while we're here to do what we can to make things better. Our worship theme for March is brokenness, and for April, it's transformation. Thinking about these two things, which seemed, I wasn't sure about the transition between the two, until I realized that they actually belong together. That acknowledging brokenness is often the first step toward change and transformation. That brokenness can push us to be the change we want to see in our lives and in the world. So I'm thinking of these Sundays from now until mid-April as a journey called the Way of Transformation, a journey from brokenness toward healing and wholeness, from winter toward spring, from Lent toward Easter, a journey that I hope you will engage with and travel with me like pilgrims on the way together. And we begin this journey by telling the truth about brokenness, that things do break, that we get old and suffer and die, that we hurt others and we hurt ourselves sometimes, that there's so much in this life beyond our control. Given this, I can tend to think of brokenness when it comes up. My first response often is to feel sad or discouraged or depressed, to see brokenness as this negative fact of life, something you have to deal with whether you want to or not. But isn't this a shallow way of thinking? Because some of the most memorable encounters I've had are with people at the end of life. And you know, difficult situations can bring out the best in us. You've seen this, right? The knowledge of our own mortality can inspire us to live more fully while we're here. You have to acknowledge and admit that something is broken before you start to fix it. Contemplating these stone walls that run throughout New England, that keep falling down, Robert Frost wrote, "Something there is that doesn't love a wall." But that truth, that awareness, it didn't send him into despair or depression. He met up with his neighbor, and they walked along that wall, and they mended that wall. And Robert Frost got a poem out of it. And if we broaden our view of brokenness, to see it not just on the personal level, but in institutions and communities and society, rather than discouraging us, might this awareness fuel us to do the work we are called to do? Put on our coveralls and get our toolboxes and set about what they call in the Hebrew tradition, tikkun olam, repairing the world. In the last couple of weeks, I've been rereading a book called The Holy Longing. I couldn't find my copy, so I had to buy a new copy. It's by the Catholic priest and theologian Ron Rollheiser. In the first sentence, he writes, "This is a book for you if you are struggling spiritually." The early chapters are an assessment of these times we're living in, what's broken, and what we might do to make things better. You know, it's helpful when you're lost to have a map or a GPS. It's important when you're trying to fix something to have a manual or a guide, some set of operating instructions, yes? That's how I experience this book, as a clear and compelling exploration of the situation we face these days, a way to work through these struggles and develop a more healthy and more life-giving spirituality. Ron Rollheiser starts off by acknowledging how much things have changed, that the old ways of doing religion are no longer working and are falling away. You know, entropy. Things fall apart. But rather than bemoan the situation, he names these struggles we face and offers a way forward. He starts off by saying, "It's never been easy to walk this earth and be at peace." He thinks it's part of our human nature to have within us what he calls a fundamental dis-ease, an unquenchable fire. He says, spirituality is about what we do with our unrest. He says we need to be strong-souled, to develop these souls that are big enough that they help us hold both our passion for life and be grounded, knowing who we are, to be on fire and also glued together. That is a healthy spirituality, he says. You know, roots and wings, heart and mind. Rollheiser sees three struggles that are unique to our time. First, he says we are naive about the nature of spiritual energy. Second, he says busyness, distraction, and restlessness plague us. And third, he says we have a problem with balance. People used to understand that spiritual energy and erotic energy was powerful and potentially dangerous. Cultures had rules and rituals for approaching the holy and for keeping human passion in balance. These taboos might seem oppressive, to our way of thinking. But Ron Rollheiser says that families and communities in those earlier societies often held together better than we do. They had meaning in their lives, and they were less prone to both inflation and depression than we are. Last fall, I got a call from a family in Lawrence. They were living in a house, they said, that was haunted, and they needed my help. I was not trained for this in divinity school. But I said that I would come over and meet their young adult son, who was the one most affected by this. And when we talked, he told me that he had been experimenting with the occult and also with meditation. And this practice at the start had been good and life-giving for him, but then something shifted. And he felt the presence of a powerful spirit that felt to him like it was messing with him and even tormenting him, making him very uncomfortable in his own home. I'll just tell you, that day, I performed the closest thing to an exorcism that I will ever get to do as a Unitarian Universalist minister. And I hope I was helpful to them. But I left that experience reminded of the fact that these are powerful forces and that we should be careful what we mess around with. It's a sign of health and wisdom to approach the altar of the holy with reverence. Just because you can find something on the internet doesn't mean that it's good for you. There are some things you shouldn't try to do all on your own. The second struggle Ron Rollheiser names is our busyness, distraction, and restlessness. This is pretty obvious, isn't it? It's no struggle that we are moving faster than our parents and grandparents did. We have access to way more information from all over the world, but we haven't learned how to hold all of that or how to metabolize it. We carry these little computers around in our pockets, and yet we sense that something is missing. One affliction of our time is a preoccupation with ourselves. We are so focused on work and achievement and other practical matters. And then when we're not working, we want to be entertained, right? I succumb to this. Flipping through so much junk. Most of us are on the go most of the time. Ron Rollheiser puts it this way. He says, narcissism accounts for our heartaches, pragmatism for our headaches, and restlessness for our insomnia. He says, we rarely find the time and space to be in touch with the deeper movements inside us and around us. I know in my own soul the longing for more spaciousness, for time to just be. Anybody else feel that longing? It's one reason I love this hour on Sunday, this time to be here together with nowhere else to go. But is it enough? I don't think so. The third challenge of our time is balance. We see this too, right? The tendency in our culture to split things apart, to pit one side against the other, to see things as either or rather than both and. You see this polarization in politics, of course. Every issue is a battle. Too often it's about winning rather than serving the common good. There's been this split in our time between the institutional church and a growing number of people who've given up on the church and say, I'm spiritual, but not religious. Certainly the church is probably mostly responsible for that, has pushed so many people away, has hurt and disappointed so many people. But I worry about those folks who are trying to do it all on their own. There's another split, a long time split, between religion and sensuality. The church doesn't do joy that well or celebrate the fact that we have these bodies very well. And our culture doesn't do very well at being restrained or reverent anymore. I'm glad that in this church we aren't too pious. Some would say we're not pious at all. And we teach our children a healthy and life-giving sexuality and spirituality. Another split Rollheiser names is between private morality and social justice. That it's unusual to find people who both pray and work for justice, who have a passion for marching and for spiritual practice. Though I think we're doing better here at living into that tension between action and contemplation. The goal in all of these is to heal these splits, to become more integrated, more whole. You probably can name other things that are falling apart, and there may be ones you need to focus on right now. But please don't stay there, because we're on the way from brokenness toward healing. And to get there, we will need to focus on what will help us and what will hold us as we travel this way together. Next week, we'll explore the idea of the wounded healer, the strength and wisdom and grace that comes from passing through hardship, making of your struggle a raft that leads to the far shore. William Safford knew something about this. In the last days of his life, he wrote, "There's a thread you follow. It goes among things that change, but it doesn't change." We may have different names for that thread. We may think of it as the human spirit or our higher power. We may call it spirit of life or even God. What matters is that you have something to hold on to. It can be hard to explain this thing. You don't often get to see that thread. You may wonder if it's there. If you're too busy or too self-absorbed or out of balance, it's easy to lose hold of it. But please don't do that, because you need it. Like we need one another. When you hold it, you can't get lost. Tragedies happen, people get hurt or die, you suffer and get old. Nothing you do can stop time's unfolding. You don't ever let go of the thread. On the way from brokenness to healing to wholeness, let's hold on to the thread and to one another. Let's hold on to hope. Let's trust in the love that will guide us, that will guide us on the way. Amen.